Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurb. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Grand Duchess of Minority Corner, Aneke, is here, and y'all, I have to confront her about something at the top of the show, because in one text, she spoiled last week's WandaVision to me. Yes! So we need to have it out, y'all, right here on Minority Corner. In this episode, we are exhuming the bodies. We are bearing witness. I watched Amistad and HBO Max's It's a Sin about a group of young gays in the 80s in London during the AIDS epidemic. Find out why we now know the Golden Globes are trash. I don't want one of those awards anymore. No, thank you. We cover the Emily in Paris controversy. Then rounding out Black History Month, we pay tribute to two Hollywood legends, Eartha Kitt. And diving deep into the amazing Dorothy Dandridge as played by Halle Berry in that HBO biopic, Legends. Then you all are in for such a treat. So Aneke in her corner, so she just found out that she's also Afro-Latina. Yes, and she's going to take us down to Argentina as she discovers and sleuths why there are no black people down in Argentina. Yes, why her family left and Argentina's historic racist past. Like Aneke Super Sleuth uncovers it all. This was just an amazing story to bear witness to, y'all. So you are in for such a treat. What an amazing episode. This is a great episode, y'all. It's just such a good one. Aneke is here. We're going to bear witness, exhume the bodies. Let's get into it. I feel like this is that time when Tyra Banks brought Naomi Campbell onto her show.
Who's who in this situation, James?
It's Tyra, because this is my show.
Whose former show was this, though, too?
But, you know, Naomi Campbell was the original black model, so okay.
Give me my laurels before you knock me down.
No, but this is why it's so funny, because like Tyra brought her on, and this is very similar. So why you'll think that it's very Tyra of me, because she came on to really like confront her, and then like Naomi's like, "Hey, I'm just on your show. Sorry for whatever happened." Like this is very much what this is, just to set the scene for the audience.
Okay, I also want to say that we've.
Do you want to tell them,
or should I? Prefacing the whole story with, we've talked about this off the microphone. So this isn't like you're confronting me, because we've talked.
That's true. This is on a very special episode of Minority Corner. They're confronting. Like, I just, you know, I wanted to wait until we hit record and then, you know, had it.
I'm going to drink my green juice.
It's mainly a PSA for spoilers. You know, WandaVision's happening, and I know I have a track record of like watching WandaVision right at midnight as it, you know, usually launches. But over the last few weeks of Minority Corner, the past guests have been telling me I need to get more sleep, and sometimes that means going to bed on time. And I knew I was doing a presentation at work about racism and things like that. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go to bed. And I'm about to click off of work, and I get Aneke, and I usually download WandaVision. I usually will just send a little email. Hey, Aneke, just text me when you see the episode. And that's it. Aneke, the first thing, I've been avoiding like internet, text, everything. And the one text, Aneke, like,
Full spoil. Not even like a cute little hint. Not even like a gentle nudge. It was a full spoil of something very big. probably something that we've been waiting for
weeks. Is this the reveal? And not even like just a full on. This is probably the revelation. I still haven't seen the episode, actually.
You still haven't?
No, because that really just deflated my tiredness.
No, I really want you. I really want you to watch it.
So I'm gonna watch it at 11 o'clock, and then I'll get a new episode. Get two back to backs on Thursday.
Oh, look at you!
Never gonna make midnight the mistake special. Of not. Watching again at midnight, and this is why I watch at midnight, because no. I know someone's gonna act a fool in this pandemic.
Okay, but here's the thing: you have to give me three credits.
Yes,
credit one. Ding. Was I not very sorry?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, so it's yes. Okay. Credit two.
Two
easily given.
Credit two. Not my normal MO.
It was a shocker. I clutched my pearls because this was so out of character. So okay. I was like, I have to chalk this up to excitement and pandemic maybe mixed together.
Third, it's 100% me being ridiculously insane tired. There's really no excuse. And I apologize 100%. Don't spoil it for people. Don't be an asshole. Don't be an aneke.
It's actually really beautiful we're having this, because it's also showing like the forgiveness is so key. Like, I love you so much. It's like, and it's such a silly thing for me to like, I can't like hold this grudge to aneke. I would be so mad at myself. Throw me off a cliff if I was, this is the hill that I was gonna die on. I have issues and problems. Run away from me.
On the One Division Hill. Like,
this is the One Division Hill I'm gonna die on. Go ahead, James, go talk to your therapist about this. But it did also make me think because there's in the pandemic, there's such little to look forward to. Like, this was like the one thing that I have.
I know.
But at the same time, I found other things to sort of, you know, fill that. And it is about, like, you know, forgiveness. Like, people are going to do things. It was a mistake. It happens. A learning. And putting this out here on the podcast, Naomi, is to be a...
Okay.
It's gonna be a learning lesson for everybody.
It's a two-way street, though.
Always check in with the other person first if they had seen it or where they are on a show.
Yeah, 100%. Always check in. Always make sure if they want to talk about it with you. And then two, I think it's a two-way street. Yeah, you can be all forgiving and everything, which is wonderful, but you also have to be very, like, sincerely sorry. Like, if I was like, okay, I'm sure if you were like, hey, why'd you do that? And I was like, get over it. It's a TV show. You would be like... you know, so
right, yeah, I would like, be like, well, we wouldn't be friends, or you would not be sitting here right now. But it's also too, it made me like, it was a moment too of like knowing myself, of like, I know how apologetic you were about it, and I just, but I knew it was still kind of like, it was an annoying at me, right? And so I just knew that I needed my time to like process it, and like I was like, okay, I just need to like go to sleep, and you know, as time progresses, like it matters less and less and less, you know, that like also get knowing your own self of like, okay, what is my journey and process of like letting this go, feeling like, oh, that sucks, I was looking forward to it, they didn't mean it, how do I process and let that go, of just like, it was a nice sort of like experience, because if you can use these small experiences when someone steps on your foot, then you can navigate in the larger world of like, I can now have like my blueprint, I know how I operate,
yeah,
and how to use that in larger situations, because it's gonna happen, people are gonna step on your toes,
or you might step on somebody's toe and you need to figure out how to deal with that, because nobody there, what we will all experience both sides, nobody is ever going to be, you know,
and I think it plays to both sides of genuine apologies and forgiveness, and like we're seeing this all over the space of celebrities and stuff who are giving, you know, when they give that apology, us as the fans too, it really doesn't really affect us, but we are like all up in it, like, oh no, they did not give me that apology, like it does not affect your daily life, like, but we will get all up into it.
Take it down.
Yeah, take it so down. Like, give me that space and grace. I will say, I did allow myself to fill my, I filled my weekend with something.
Would
else
you fill it with?
I went down a different direction.
Uh-oh, where are we going?
That caught me. So I would say the theme of my weekend viewing was Exhuming the Bodies, Bearing Witness. So I watched. Okay,
dark.
No, because this is this stuck with me when Viola Davis's acceptance speech for one of her many awards.
She said, "Deserves them all."
Pick one. She said, exhume the bodies. And that hit me like a ton of bricks, because as storytellers, exhuming those bodies of those people who they're stories that need to be told, right? And our job to bear witness to those stories, those struggles, so that way we can give credence. Like, if any of us who have ever struggled, mostly what we wanted was someone to bear witness to our journey and our struggle. And we too will then learn from that and be empowered, because we will understand that journey and that struggle that much more.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so there were two different stories that I took in.
I bared witness.
I watched and I was like, I can't have WandaVision this week, but I will bear witness to this. And this is just where I love like history. Let me soak it up. So first one movie I watched was Amistad. I never seen it. The original Aneke.
Okay, I saw this in the notes. She's like,
a reboot?
I didn't know. I was like, is this Amistad? We got our freedom. Now we're taking the seas. Like, what's going on?
I did just, because like Amistad's like a one, you could just say Amistad. And that's it. That's what you need to say. Walk away. Walk away from the bank. Walk away with your money. Amistad. I mean, and next time you're in an argument with Andrew, just be like, Amistad.
I'm not gonna do that. First and foremost,
call me up, FaceTime me. I'll do it. Put me on. I don't know why I am so feisty today.
You bared witness to Amistad, so you and know it got
me.
You
got me.
You never. I had to watch Amistad so many times in school. They had us watch it 100 times.
Okay,
it's.
But it's something, but you bared witness to it. And I think I had not, because I'm a little bit younger than you. So maybe I missed the boat on that. But like, also like I was bebopping around. I was like, what, 10 or 12. And like, there's a certain window when it's just like, especially if you are a black kid, like you're not interested in diving into that. You're trying to just like
100% survive. You're trying to live your life.
Like, look at all these white kids living their lives. Like, they don't have to like watch Roots or like,
I know,
Martin Luther King's story. Like, you know, it's a lot. Or watching like, you know, black people being hoes. I just have these images, or sitting down at the counters. Like, sometimes I just want to like watch Sailor Moon. Like, that's
exactly. I'm just trying to think of like when that movie came out, because our age gap is big enough where I could have been watching it in school where I was like 13 and you were like
1997, you know? It came out, and so that is I'm like 12.
Okay,
right there.
That makes sense, because I was like 15. We were watching it in high school.
That makes sense.
Which is good. Snaps to your high school.
Snaps to your school. Mm-hmm. And so if you're unfamiliar with Amistad, sorry, I'm laughing at you.
Because sir, why did I just...
Because it is kind of like...
What block are you living in? Yeah, here, okay. If you don't we're know gonna what give that
space
movie...
You can't come in onto this show. We're going to give space. Welcome. Try to be inviting. I can't believe we just laughed at that poor listener. Sorry, but that's silly.
You have to at least know the name.
Woo, we love it as you.
I'm sorry, I feel bad. I feel bad, but you know what?
Welcome.
It's so to Spielberg, catch you, right?
Steven Spielberg. And I will say this. I like this so much more than I think that he grew so much as a director from when he did The Color Purple. I have said this.
Oh yeah.
Because I did reverse order. I saw The Color Purple, the musical, and then I watched the movie. The musical to me was so much deeper into the material, into the, because it was directed by black people.
Oh yes,
the book.
It's the book. It's the black people. It's the singing. It's all the emotions. Whereas Steven Spielberg is like, come on,
Oprah. Too whimsical for me. Steven Spielberg's interpretation of it, like the score, there was too many like little cutesy moments. And looking at it like with 2018 goggles that I was looking at, or 2019 goggles, like it just, but Amistad, because I went in arms folded like, okay, white man, let's see. Because also too, like you couldn't. What's so sad is like back then with Color Purple and Amistad, there was no black director that they were going to give millions of dollars to shoot these movies to. Like, well, nowadays, like...
Yeah, I mean, barely John Singleton at the time, but barely. And they only like had him in small little sections doing like Boys in the Hood or whatever, you know? So
yeah, but Amistad is such like... It's just too like, I have to, as a, you know, watching my ancestors going back to here, I want to bear witness, but I have to be in the right sort of mental frame. But I don't... For me, it's sort of like how I also pay homage to, because there's not like you know, place that I can really go to right now in this pandemic. But so for me, it's like the movies are my, how I pay homage, like my ancestors. And so it,
that's nice.
So it's a story about a true story, 1839, the slave ship La Amistad, looking at you, Spain, doing this illegal ass slave trade.
We're going to be looking a lot at Spain.
Put a pin in that. So they're doing this illegal slave trade, and it was these enslaved folks had revolted and had like overthrown and taken the ship, but then the ship ended up being back in the United States, and it was this court process of them trying to, in the courts, were they freed, were they slaved, and it was a tipping point of where the Civil War might end up breaking into if they were going to grant these folks their freedom. They did end up getting their freedom. All-star cast, Morgan Freeman.
Hence my spoiler again for Amistad. I'm sorry with my Amistad 2.
They should do a sequel, because when they get back to their land, it's still devastating that like some of their family members had been enslaved. Like, it wasn't like a happy ending for them. But I thought like good job. It was a really good movie. Steven Spielberg, because he had done Schindler's List at this point, so I feel like he was able to dive into the darkness of it. Like, there was no whimsy of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when he did Color Purple, he was whimsical. E.T.
And it was PG-13. Color Purple needs to be like, you know,
R.
I don't know, R.
Because there's some sexy sex, right?
Rated R, but bring the kids because they need to see this.
Get a note.
Get a note from your doctor. Get a note from your mama. And
your
bring
doctor.
Her too.
Can
bring
I watch mama. Color Purple, the R-rated version?
You
Dr.
better.
Martin.
You better. In fact, I'm going too. And here's permission slips for my daughter as well. Let's go. Dr. Martin says, get
this
your ass.
This is how black
the
people work. This is how.
In our small communities, yes. So I like, if you haven't, Debbie Allen produced this movie, and she had to fight.
She's everywhere.
She had to fight tooth and nail to get this movie done. And
oh my God.
Cause, and this is back in the 80s when she had like read the book. She was like, oh, we got to tell this story. And they were like, sorry, Debbie Allen, you're the queen of Hollywood right now, but we can't do it. And the only reason why they're like, nobody wants to see this Debbie Allen. And she was like, okay, we'll see. 5, 6, 7, 8. Who do I see over there? Steven Spielberg. His kid went to her kid's like elementary school. And that's how
they did this in a parent group.
But that's how connections are so important. Why all these white stories keep getting told is she didn't have her kid in Steven Spielberg's school. How is this going to get done?
I know. It's like we have to get a permission slip from famous white people in order to do something. Even though Debbie Allen is a treasure.
Yes. Remember at the height of her career, they let her do that silly music video with her sister Felicia Rashad. What is it?
You know what? That was a vanity piece.
They did a Debbie Allen like variety hour. Like, Debbie Allen, whatever you want to do, you can do it. She's like, I want to tell the story of Amistad. And they were like, not that. Do you want to dance? Do you want to put on a gold lame dress with your sister and prance around New York City?
That's what we want. She's like, no. Black.
He's not man enough.
Did you see Hot Chocolate? That Hot Chocolate Nutcracker?
I need to. I've heard. It was recommended.
It's peak Debbie Allen. It's peak where she's just like, no! Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka! 5, 6, 7, 8! And it's good.
That's where I love my DA. That's what I love.
I know.
Debs Allen.
I love her.
So the other recommendation that I have, Exhuming the Bodies, it's up. You will devour.
That's so creepy to me. I just think of bones falling apart.
I'm talking about like the spirits, like, the stories. Like, I'm talking about like the stories. Right, yeah. Think more like, think more. Get into your Santa Cruz roots. Get into
I like that, but I just I've been watching a lot of Forensic Files.
No, that's not right. I mean, like the spiritual stories. So It's a Sin on HBO.
I'm usually
a person who I don't like to binge. I like to like space things out, just because I like to savor things.
I was just going to say, you
like to
savor.
Because otherwise you like get through it and you're like, what do I do now? You're like an addict and you're jonesing for your next show. And then you watch like you're watching like Siempre Bruja and you're like, this is garbage, but I need something to watch. Sorry, that show, they tried.
This is garbage. But I know.
It's a sin. It's essentially about a young coming of age sort of story about a young group of gay diverse kids in London and their biracial lady friend.
Oh, England.
And it's by Russell T. Davis. He did the original Queer as Folk. He did Torchwood, which was the sort of queer Doctor Who spinoff. He was a writer on Doctor Who.
Cool.
It's phenomenal. It's only 5 episodes. And why he's such a
HBO Max, right?
He's such an amazing writer because in 5 episodes, you will feel like you had seen like 5 seasons of a show. In one episode, so much will happen. And the acting is so phenomenal. The characters, the relationships are so rich that so much will happen in one episode. Mm. And he not only addresses first of all, the thing that made me realize is how young the kids dying of the 1980s pandemic were. Oftentimes, I feel like I've seen it. It's mainly like men in their 30s or 40s or trying to play younger, but that's Mark Ruffalo and he's 40 years old. Like, you know, that's, but they were young. They were young. Lead singer of Years and Years plays the lead. If you know the band, the group Years and Years.
I'm old.
Well, he's really amazing because he's an out queer artist. So add him to the list. His music is really phenomenal.
Okay. All right. I'll write it to my little notebook.
I see you writing it down. Okay, you don't need a permission slip for this one. Okay, you just get right on in there. I think it's one of the best pandemic shows to watch because it shows, like, first of all, the biggest thing you'll walk away with was like, wow, we are so fortunate that this current pandemic was affecting straight white people. That's why you got this cure happening. You think that you like, oh yeah, it was really fucked up what had happened. When you're watching the story unfold, you realize just the invisible nature to that there was this pandemic that was happening for almost a full decade that went unnoticed, that was specifically targeting young gay men.
I cannot believe when I look back and see the history of it. And also, I'm so glad this show takes place in London because I feel like the only stories that I hear about the AIDS epidemic either happen in New York or San Francisco. And we don't hear about anywhere else and that it was a global pandemic and that it's affected and decimated millions upon millions of international people.
Yeah. You know? They were babies. And it's so sad. These lives that were taken. And it's, you think about it. Yeah. They had just found themselves, like gay people were just finding their own communities and groups and living their best life. Yeah. And then there was this disease that was killing them. And there would be actually this thing, like there was like, don't have sex with people from America. Don't have sex with guys from America. Cause it was just an American gay disease, you know? And there was a lot of folks in the community who didn't want to hear it. They were like, this is propaganda. Cause there was no real true messaging system. There wasn't the government coming out and saying, hey, this is what, you know, there was a lot of misinformation that was happening.
Yes.
It made me also realize how little, okay. There's one thing I do want to say. My therapist, he was a part of ACT UP, and I told him about the show, and I said, you don't need to watch this show, because he lived through it. This show is for if you were not 18 and over and queer living through this, I don't think this is for millennials and Generation Z to really get a grasp on what happened. Again, exhume the bodies, hear these stories. It's so important. I know ACT UP has a little bit of issue with it, and I can understand it of where that is. But for those of us who weren't on the front lines and living through it, like this is, and it's also just really great to see. It made me realize I don't get to watch shows about queer people. It's also a very fun show. You're going to laugh. It's the writing is so good. You get to see them. They weren't just like, oh, we're dying. It was also just a lot of like, you know, living their lives and enjoying their lives. It was all of those things. So it's 5 episodes. You will eat it up. He's a phenomenal Russell T. Davis. Just wonderful.
I am into it. Isn't this the one with Neil Patrick Harris doing a weird British accent?
Yeah.
How's his British accent? It
was
fine.
I don't know. He was blending in with everybody else. And
good. Then that's all that matters.
It'll leave you wanting more. Russell T. Davis, he has another show he did 2019 called Years and Years, which is similar.
I heard that one was good, but I'm scared. It's supposed to be like
wild because he did the show in 2019 and essentially it's taking place in the UK. And it's sort of like in the backdrop, Trump has won another election. And that's just the backdrop, because the focus is on not on the U.S., but it's essentially just sort of like, it's a good show to watch because It's a Sin shows what happened in the past. And this one takes place in the next 10 years. So it spans over what's happening in the next 10 years and shows how demagogues can get into power. So they kind of have their own person who starts rising, talks about nuclear war, immigration, and it's sort of like Handmaid's Tale, but queer people are at the front stage of it, in terms of like all these rights and things that we have, how it's a slippery slope. It paints it's like a must watch, and sort of like everyone stay awake and stay eye on the prize of what can happen. It's just it's a brilliant eye-opening show, and how we're not done. Like, we're not done with the work that needs to be done. And so stay awake. And it's a good,
I wanted to watch that, but I was just so freaked out by what was going on with Trump and stuff. So I think now
that seems fair. It's a good, and you know, it's also helpful. Okay, that it takes place in the UK, and that's the same thing with It's a Sin. It gives you that bit of distance, which is it's called the Brechtian effect. If we want to get to theater, where you're able to have push effect, where it alienates the audience, and you're able to. It makes it safer for you to come and explore. It's why we love science fiction, where you can have different, about, you know, with Avatar, it's like, you get to draw the connections of what those are without it being so literal and real right in front of your face. It's separate from you. And I think that will help, because it's like, oh, this is separate. And it allows you will choose how those connections, you might see them, how they can pop up into your own personal.
Oh, that's good. I love these recommendations, James. I could just listen to James's Break It Down.
Well,
do you like that, James? Break It Down.
Exhume the bodies. You don't like that James one. Break it down and exhume the bodies. Okay, I want to I want to throw this out. Aneke, I thought, you know, I wanted an E-ga-ga-ga-ga, which was an Emmy, a Golden Globe, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. Yeah. Take that GG out. I'll stick to my regular EGOT, please. That Golden Globe is
You're tired
trash.
Of the Golden Globes.
I thought
Globes.
I loved that award show because it was fun. They got to drink, and it was like Tina Fey.
They're drunk. They're eating. Yeah.
It's trash. You want to tell them why it's trash?
Well, the controversy has just come out regarding the nominations and the people who are on
the Hollywood Foreign Press. Yeah.
Hollywood Foreign Press, which is like a shrouded group of individuals that pick these awards. It is not a democratic process in order to, you know, like the SAG awards. That's way
I
more
get to
like,
vote in
it's
that.
Like actors. See? Because he's
I'm
SAG.
I'm sad, y'all, but I haven't paid my dues yet, so they didn't let me. But for next time, y'all.
He's sort of SAG.
They were like, now you're SAG again, but you can't vote because you missed the deadline. But next time, impress me.
You better
impress
watch out.
Impress me with your work, because I got my vote pen.
Bubbling in those names.
And I'm watching.
See, I trust that. I trust the SAG Awards. But who is this Hollywood Foreign Press? Whatever, right? So it's recently come, because when the nominations came out for the Golden Globes, they said, hey, we're nominating Emily in Paris. And people were like, but what? And this trash show that was on Netflix?
And then you were looking at the list. You were like, oh, great. And where is I May Destroy You? Where is Michaela Cole?
Nowhere to be found.
This is
excuse him.
What? And people were like, how did this
Nowhere.
Happen?
So it turns out that Emily in Paris invited the Hollywood Foreign Press to Paris for an all-expense-paid fabulous, luxurious vacation, a trip to the set, staying in the most rich hotels, feeding them the most delicious food in 2019. So, of course, when these mysterious people went to go put the nominations in, they remembered Emily in Paris. And this is the case with the Golden Globes and most award shows, sadly, where they take up full page ads for people, they invite people into rooms, they do this whole press.
It's what Harvey Weinstein, fuck him, was so good at. Of like, he was so good at wooing the voters for his BLD shows. And also, too, it comes to find out that there is not a single black person in the voting block of the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Why am I not surprised about that?
It all makes sense. And then you know what? Because I used to look to the Golden Globes of, like, they weren't so much hashtag Oscars so white. Right? And I realized it was just sort of like a blessing if a black person ever was nominated or voted. They just happened to see that
to support them.
They got enough press or enough buzz or the right people at the top got it into their eyesight. And now it's like, it's trash now. That is a complete trash award. And it makes me so mad. I love the Golden Globes. Fuck it. I'm done. It's just all. And then they put Minari into the foreign category.
That's
just racist. It is just racist. It is not. No. It's an Asian American story. Next coming up on the prescriptions list is our prescription for celebrating Hollywood Black film legend.
Right on target, Hollywood.
Hey, kid. Your dad tell you about the time he broke Stephen Dorff's nose at the Kids' Choice Awards?
In Dead Pilot Society, scripts that were developed by studios and networks but were never produced are given the table reads they deserve.
When I was a kid, I had to spend my Christmas break filming a PSA about angel dust. So yeah, being a kid sucks sometimes.
Presented by Andrew Reich and Ben Blacker. Dead Pilot Society, twice a month on MaximumFun.org.
You know, the show you like, that hobo with the scarf who lives in a magic dumpster.
Doctor Who?
Yeah. Hollywood.
I'm a black woman, and you need to put me in your pictures. Get out of here, black lady. Fuck you. I am Eartha Kitt. Meow.
Where am I right now? Where am I?
I don't know. I imagine that would be like a radio morning show. Yeah. They just press a button. That was the whole button.
All
that
the
was
sound
the
effects.
Whole, like they could play it again.
Every
it was the
effect.
Whole thing. Oh, so that was your opening. So as we're closing out Black History Month, I want to celebrate some black film legends of old. Mainly the we're going to spend most of our time with Dorothy Dandridge, because I finally saw Halle Berry's biopic movie again.
Yeah. Her passion project.
I was bebopping around and I was like, nah, I'm not watching this. What's Sailor Moon doing? Okay, we're going to build up. So I want to take a little bit of time to talk about Eartha Kitt, but then the creme de la creme, I want to dive into Dorothy Dandridge. So Eartha... am I doing it?
Sure. Yeah.
Batman.
No.
I can't. I'm not ready.
You got the ums part. You got
I'm Batman. Little Penguin-y.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. It's all of them.
Oh, Lord.
Together.
But she's born Eartha Mae Kitt, born January 17th, 1927 in South Carolina. She, you know, singer, dancer, noted for her sultry style and her beauty. She was just a lot of different success. She was both... I love it. Nikki's like Eartha Kitt.
I mean, that's just how we, you know, we do a little bit of claw claw.
It's great.
Claw claw.
She was born. She's Cherokee as well. Mm. She's daughter of a Cherokee and black mother, and then her father was white. She was up in Harlem doing all kinds of great things. It was super diverse. She was like, I love this.
Who wouldn't? Harlem
but
back
she was
then
teased
cool.
for her mixed race heritage because people don't when they don't understand. Something like this is I don't get it. Let me
and people be rude.
Mm-hmm. Kids be mean. At 16, she joined Katherine Dunham's dance troupe, and she toured all around the United States. You know, Mexico, South America, Europe. So 16, she's like seeing the world. She went to Paris. I'd like to see a show called Eartha in Paris. Much more Eartha Kitt in Paris.
I would rather see that.
Yes, she won immediate popularity as a nightclub singer, and then she really made a splash in her acting debut of as Helen of Troy in Time Runs. It was an Orson Welles adaptation of Faust. Lot of layers there. That was in 1950. Like, and Faust, that's
what was bad. Happening.
That sounds like a crazy ass play for the 1950s doing such like craziness.
Orson Welles was, I'm sad that he turned into a joke because he did a lot of crazy shit in a time that crazy shit wasn't happening.
Yes. And Faust is a wild play.
I know.
And so to Orson Welles to adapt that, I would like to see that.
And then stick an Eartha Kitt in the middle.
As Helen of Troy, like, it's a lot of layers. This is a lot of layers.
I need to see that.
We got to see this. And then she had her appearance, her Broadway review, Leonard Sillman's New Faces in 1952. So she's just taken off. And then she had her hit song, C'est si bon.
C'est bon. C'est bon.
You know it. Look at you. That's her.
En français.
That was her bop. That was a bop. And then she, her big bop, Santa Baby. People were loving that shit. They're like, Santa get me baby, Christmas.
Horny, horny Christmas time. Santa Baby. Horny, horny Christmas.
My tree. You know who got a nasty ass Christmas song? Lady Gaga. So going down, she's like, something, it's Christmas tree is her pussy. And she's like, get underneath my Christmas tree. Wow. Iggy presents, Christmas tree presents.
Wow.
Meat dress. So.
Is that how it goes? I hope it is. I wanted to be like, well, I feel like Eartha Kitt was probably the first Sexy Town horny Christmas song then.
Oh yeah, she was the first because people were like doing it up. They were like, they were like, oh, she's singing what we're all doing. Thank you. She's speaking truth to power. So she did a lot of different like shows and things like that. She did, you can, you know, look at her career, but her biggest thing, Catwoman, late 60s, playing, you know, Batman. But why her career probably took a bit of a turn, so she's doing all these things. She was at a 1968 luncheon with the First Lady, Lady Bird Johnson. And she said to Lady Bird at this luncheon, cameras were like clickety clack 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 click 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 click. And as they were trying to eat their tea, and she's spilling the tea, and she said, You send the best of the country off to be shot and maimed. Okay, I'm not gonna do it.
No, but I mean, that wasn't that bad. But okay. She probably wasn't sexy when she was saying it.
But she said to her in her sexy ass voice, which you can imagine it, you send the best of this country off to be shot and maimed. No wonder the kids rebel and take plot. And then people were like, That's not even that bad. But it was, you know, she was slamming the Vietnam War, which. Good.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
A bad war, y'all. Like, not a. Where was she wrong? And so people were like, sorry, Eartha, you done. Like, canceled. And so the wrong kind of cancel culture. And she was like surveilled by the U.S. Secret Service. They were keeping
eyes on her. They've been surveying everybody. They were like, you tripped on that. We're going to watch you for 10 years.
Yes.
Like, what? Uh-huh.
Take a look at that Fred Hampton movie. Oh gosh, what is it?
Judas and Black Messiah.
Judas and the Black Messiah. And Aneke, thank you. It snaps to you because you told us all about Fred Hampton a long time ago. So definitely check out that movie. It is, you know, it's a miracle that any black people are still alive because they were just finding any reason to murder us. Like, what did they want from us? Like, again, and it goes back to this case system, this caste system that we are in. It is.
100%. And it's international too. It's not just America.
Ain't no place to be safe. So in 1978, she had a career renaissance in a Broadway play called Timbuktu, which was a remake of Kismet with an all black cast. I was in a production of Kismet. Kismet is a wild play.
What the hell is Kismet about?
It's about fate.
Okay, don't be there.
There's hit songs like Not Since Nineveh. It's set in Arabia. And it's
why
like
they gotta call it Timbuktu for black people though? Why can't there's black people in Arabia? Rude.
They had
nothing
really
wrong with Timbuktu.
Okay.
Nothing wrong, but
our
okay,
boy
yeah.
Jimmy Carter comes into the picture. So she earned a Tony Award nomination for her role that she played, and then Jimmy Carter was like, come over to the White House. I love what you're doing. Let's talk about building houses. And then
he loves to build a house.
She returned to the charts in 1984 with her hit song, Where Is My Man? It's a hit song. You know,
I was one in some change. So
I was in the ether.
I know.
Like,
you were in that
it.
Soul place where you were bouncing around.
That was me.
That was her muse.
And then she got her Grammy Award nominations for Back in Business, 1994. She did a lot of different things.
Classic.
All this great stuff. Classic sort of thing here. So, you know, but she died of colon cancer in 2006.
That's a rough one.
Wait, yeah, nope, she did not die. She learned she had colon cancer in 2006. And she died on December 25th, 2008.
3-year battle.
How
that she died on Christmas and she's like the Christmas song?
Santa Baby. She's the Christmas sexy angel.
You know what? That's a good career, though.
Oh, 100%. And she'd been around for so long. It was just so classy, so wonderful. And the fact that like her career took that turn because she said that truth to Lady Bird Johnson.
She stuck to her gun. She did what she had to do. I appreciate that. You know, so much respect to Eartha Kitt.
Okay. Dorothy motherfucking Dandridge. So you have HBO Max. Watch this film. Halle Berry at her best.
Peak.
I get why she played that part.
I saw it. And it's her passion project. Halle Berry did all the research. She's the one that drove the force. She like really pushed to get this done. So this is her movie, which is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get why you like give her, she got a Golden Globe, which now I'm side-eyeing the Golden Globes. But good.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Good job, white people. Good job. God, like, what does she gotta do? Like, act like the world, like, act her heart out, like, do all the tricks. She kills it in it. She had to pull out all the stops, you know. Next, like, it's like Halle Berry versus like Emily in Paris. Like, oh, I don't know.
Boo.
So, highly recommend. Highlight. She was the first Black woman nominated for Best Actress.
Yes.
Dorothy Dandridge. She was the first Black woman to be on the cover of Life magazine. And she said in her autobiography, Everything and Nothing, the Dorothy Dandridge tragedy, if it is possible for a human being to be like a haunted house, maybe that would be me.
Dark. Talk about exhuming the bodies. Jesus.
Exhume the bodies.
Calling yourself a haunted house.
She had a tragic fucking life. So she's born in Cleveland, 1922. Her dad wasn't really, her dad was like abandoned, but her mother was an actress as well. Did TV and radio and stuff. She was on Amos and Andy, which was a big deal at the time, but Amos and Andy is
it
very,
has blackface
like,
roots.
Not great. Yes, 100%. But her mom was like, doing those sort of like, she was
getting the work
those,
that she had to get.
Those roles, getting work. Mm-hmm. That she could do. Right. Yeah. And so, but her mom was like, because her mom was also a cook and she could see that her kids were talented. She's like, my kids ain't going to be no cook. So she was like, my kids got talent, ultimate momager. She was like 5, 6, 7, 8, clap it up. Let's get on the beat. And she had her partner her lady partner. Her mom liked the ladies. But her partner was an asshole. Like Geneva Williams, they called her Auntie Mama or May May. And she would physically abuse and mentally abuse Dorothy.
Gross.
So, I mean, tragedy already at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So,
a fan.
You see it when you watch the Whitney documentary. You see this stuff has roots. So, fast forward when they're like popping pills and like the industry's already tough enough. And if you don't have a very strong foundation, it's going to be rough. And you, Black woman,
good grief.
Lord. Mm-hmm. So they were the Wonder Children, her and her sister.
They called them
Vivian,
the Wonder
in the Chitlin Circle. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they were called the Wonder Kids or the Wonder Children, but that was their first like starting like. Then they were the. I do. I was like, look, give me some Wonder Kids. And then 1934, they were the Dandridge sisters with And there was three of them with Etta Jones, who was not related, but they could have. you know, you go back to like, I said, they're like the brothers, the sisters.
I know. Well, they had
related.
To, you know.
But it's a cute gimmick. It's a cute gimmick. And so she would also get like a little bit roles here and there, her and her sister. She performed at the Cotton Club, which was a huge, backing Cab
Calloway. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. And Dorothy confronted early on segregation and racism in the entertainment industry. That she sometimes, like, she may have been allowed on stage, but in some venues, couldn't even eat at the restaurant or use the facilities because of the color of her skin. They'd be like, oh, I gotta use the bathroom. Be like, pee in this cup.
Rude in the and back. Racist and gross.
And then they're like, but put your pretty dress on and go sing for us. Wild.
Awful.
She met the very talented, famous ass Harold Nichols, who eventually they got married in 1942 during World War II. They performed at the Palladium, which she loved being at the Palladium during World War II, which is in London. It was a huge, big deal. But she'd also have to, like, hide and shelter from German bombs. So she's like, I loved it, but we'd also have to, like... And she said sometimes, like, they wouldn't even, like, go hide anymore. They'd
just be like, the bombs are happening. Now let's have a drink. I don't want to wear a mask.
Yeah, that's the world. Boom. Yeah. Right. So she was in the Marx Brothers classic A Day at the Races in 1937.
Oh, wow.
She was in...
She's just, like, collecting Going these, places, like... She's Force Gumping it up with all of these people.
She had a daughter with Harry, who she named Carolyn. I think it's just really funny.
Like Carolyn, but Harry. Yes. Like Harold and Carolyn. Carolyn.
Yeah, she's a girl. It's like Carolyn.
What about Harriet?
Oh, she went with Harolyn. I don't know. So 1943, during her first message.
Creativity.
Unfortunately, Lynn was intellectually disabled, which Dandridge blames this because, okay, this was fucked up. And her doctor's like, this isn't what happened, but she always held this to what happened is that her husband, she was going to labor. Her husband, Harry, was out at the golf courses. She had no car, no way to get anywhere. And then she was like, no, I want to wait for him. And they were like, girl, you need to go have this baby.
Yes.
And she held on so long. And they believe that it just messed up with when the daughter came out with getting oxygen and things like that. So
a couple of questions.
Yes.
First one.
Also, she's black, too, so she's not getting good medical care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100. How long was he playing golf? Because when you go into labor, that's like 20 some odd hours.
Well, so I don't know, but that scene, Halle Berry is screaming and hollering, and they're like, go to the hospital. She's like, I can't. I gotta wait for Harry. And then she's like, this is your baby. I named her Harolyn. I'm going to call her Lynn. And that's what happened. So
it's one of those things where it's like, before you have a kid, you're like, that makes sense. And then after you have a kid, you're like, what's going on?
Where was
because
he?
Like, you can do your makeup. You like cook dinner. You like walk out. Oh, I'm in labor. I'm going to go.
But I guess, you know what? He didn't have like a cell phone, you know? I guess it'd be hard to get word out.
Yeah,
but shouldn't have, like, I don't know. If my wife is like super pregnant, I feel like I'm not going to be going off too far for
Give
hours.
It a couple weeks, sir. Yeah. Just hang out with your pregnant
She's
ass
about
wife.
100%. So, yeah, he was no good. So when someone shows you who they really are, believe him the first time. She probably shouldn't have taken this, but here he is.
And then she goes as far as to name their daughter Harolyn.
So she never really recovered from this, and they actually ended up, you know, she ended up pretty much putting Harolyn in this care back then. She pretty much, because she couldn't really take care of her daughter the way that she would have liked to. She loved her daughter all of her heart, so
okay,
she
good.
But paid for this really fancy caretaking facility to be able to take care of her daughter.
That's
but
sad.
She had a lot of issues with just men. She called them they were just like moths to a flame burned by desire for her.
She's hot.
She was hot, but she kept getting burned. She kept being burned by them. The moth would fly in, and then she the flame, and she getting burned.
No fair.
So acting, she went to acting school and was friends with Marilyn Monroe,
ooh,
Ava Gardner. They were all little friends at the Method-Based Actors Laboratory. They were all running around.
What is this, cute girl gang? What is this?
Yes, 100%. 100%. And she was like, I'm a serious actress. I got shit to do. And she had a stint at the Macabre Club with Desi Arnaz's band for a sellout 14-week engagement at La Vie en Rose.
Wow, 14 weeks.
She was an international star. She was performing at London, Rio de Janeiro, San Francisco, New York. She was doing it up. And then her first starring film role was Bright Road, 1953, starring across Harry Belafonte.
Okay, sexy.
They had a passionate affair. Oh, she divorced Harold. Like,
okay,
done.
Kick him to the curb. Get this guy out of here. Mm-hmm. Okay, sexy Harry.
Mm-hmm. They had a passionate love affair, and but because they were two hot chocolates, you know, loving up on each other. They were loving it. Two chocolate Hollywood hotties.
Hey, you know what? Power couple. Power. Hot
but
chocolate couple.
They both like therapy too much, and they're always psychoanalyzing each other. So it was
okay,
just a
disaster.
Okay,
that's not that hot. That kind of ruins it a little bit. Womp womp.
Carmen Jones. If you haven't seen it, recommend. The movie is it. You will appreciate it for what it is. And I'm sure at the time it was really, but it's 2021 now, so you're going to be looking at it with these goggles.
It's a little campy. It's a little camp.
The plot is wild. There's a point, but you know what? So that's Dorothy Dandridge. She did all those damn stunts. There's a part in the movie where she's running on a train, moving
it's
train
like
in
control.
Heels. Why is she running on a train? The plot is wild. It's
based off of Carmen the Opera, which is wild too.
Which is already wild. And then it was directed by Otto Preminger, and he wanted to do an all black cast of the film adaptation of Carmen. But he wanted to make a musical, but grounded. And so almost to a fault, because sometimes there'll be like dance numbers happening, but he's like, that's not the point. Let's zoom in on the people who are talking. And there's these amazing dance numbers happening in the background. And you're just like, you just see legs kicking. You're like, that choreography looks amazing. And they're dancing their heart out. Little do they know, they're not really on camera.
Not there. No.
Also, too, the music was done by Hammerstein, but this is before maybe Rodgers and Hammerstein, because like the lyrics were not great. Like,
it's only Hammerstein.
I think it's just Hammerstein. You need that Rodgers.
It's no Cinderella. It's no Impossible.
We're not there yet. Hold on, Brandy. Your time will come. And every black actress wanted this part, even Eartha Kitt. Like, everybody was after it.
I mean, can you imagine? If you're a hottie black lady, this is what you want to do.
All black cast? And yes, absolutely. And so her agent was like getting her an audition, and he saw her and she was all shy and mousy, like Dorothy Dandridge. She was like, I went to acting school.
Why is she being shy and mousy when she's performed in Rio de Janeiro, London, been all over the world, did like
there
a 14-week thing with Desi?
There was a power in Otto that scared her. I don't know. And he was like, no, you can't be this part. You're Cindy Lou. And she was like, what? No. And she was like furious, and then she got herself all gussied up. She ran over to Max Factor Studio, made herself over, and she
this
came
is
back.
Who I, yes.
And she was like, I am Carmen motherfucking Jones, motherfucker. Look at my red lipstick. Look at my hair. Look at my tight, sexy red dress. Look at this rose. I am a hussy.
See? I mean, come on. This is a lady who has been around the world, who squeezed a baby in her coochie for hella long. This is a lady who needs that role. I mean, come on.
Yes. Yeah.
Calloway?
Yes. And so he was like, okay, yeah, you got this part. Okay. And then they ended up, and then at one point they're about to shoot, and she's like, I can't do it, I'm sorry, because she was kind of scared. And he's like, what? I already got the NAACP to like clear it, because Otto Preminger was about like walking that fine line for like,
I like
you
that.
Wanted, yeah, we'll get to, you know.
Okay, all right.
But he was like, NAACP cleared it, and she's like, I can't do it, like, sorry, I quit.
She's a lot. Oh my God.
He goes over to her house and convinces her, and they start a passionate love affair, and he kind of becomes her daddy, like a sugar daddy kind of in a way. Okay, but he's married, but he has like a wife, but they have like an understanding, and you know,
back then
she gets an Oscar nomination for Carmen Jones, and she is up against Judy Garland, Grace Kelly won.
Shit.
But like, this is this is who Dorothy, and that's why like it's so sad, because she's not as prevalent of a name as like Judy Garland or Grace Kelly. It's just very this is where Otto started getting too much in her business, right?
Uh-oh,
he and her
okay.
husband, she already got a manager, and so she was up for all these different parts, and he was like, no, you can't take that part. You're an Oscar nominated actress now. No, you don't do that part. And she was supposed to play one of the roles in The King and I, and he was like, you gotta turn that down. And it went to Rita Moreno instead.
Oh, her friend. Mm-hmm. Oh, Otto.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get out of here.
Yeah. So Yep. And and also Harry Belafonte, not too great in that movie.
He's
but
handsome.
He was his first role in Carmen.
He's a singer. So,
Black Struggle. So when you really look at it, like, you know, the people just weren't really ready for her. Like, you know, Jim Crow was, mm-hmm. you know, going on. So she was super gorgeous. And she was, you know, light skinned. But they were still like, you're Black. And racism's going to mm-hmm. do what racism's going to do. Like, she just all these different things. Like, people were trying to get her on the casting couch. And she's like, I'm not going to sleep with you. Like, I'm not going to do it. Like, to get that role, not going to do it. Henry Kahn, not going to do it. And she said, if I were Betty Grable. Oh my God, just made me think about that story about way back when, episode 4, Betty Grable's head. Go back to the archives, go back to episode 4 to catch up of the shocking reveal.
What happens to Betty Grable?
What happened to Betty Grable's? It's wild how she dies. It's
full circle. About,
like, what happens to her soul? Yeah, but she said, if I were Betty Grable, I could capture the world.
Are you sure you want to be Betty Grable? So,
I don't think didn't know how that story was gonna end, but she did Island in the Sun with Harry Belafonte. I tried to rent it. I can't even find that one online. That movie had Joan Fontaine and Joan Collins in it, as well as Harry Belafonte. Tamango, which no one really liked, but she plays the mistress of a captain of an enslaved ship. She was gonna do a Billie Holiday picture, but that never called Lady Sings the Blues. That never ended up happening. And so she just had, you know, a lot. Her nothing went well with her and Otto. It just ended in a bad place. He was like, I'm not going to leave my white wife. Yeah, I like Black people in the struggle, but you're black. And I'm a white man. He was verbally abusive to her on the set of Porgy and Bess, which, like, Porgy and Bess was like, oh, we love her again. Yeah. She's great. It was kind of the last great thing she would do. She had terrible marriages. She married this guy, Jack Dennison, who was a nightclub manager. They used to get in lots of fights. He left her bankrupt, bad oil investments. She was like, I'm going to start this restaurant. It went nowhere.
Dorothy,
she had, like,
all
no
of these
money.
Dudes.
Yes. They took all of her stuff. She had no money. She couldn't pay for Lynn's place where they had her. So they had to put her in a mental institution. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So wrapping up this sad tragedy of Dorothy Dandridge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it didn't help that she was backing up all of these pictures, thanks to Otto. And so she was back to singing in nightclubs and doing tours, but she was drinking a lot, popping
when
a lot of pills.
When is this? Is this like the 60s?
1960s. Yeah.
Okay.
She was having a lot of spasms. She was having a lot of like issues. Also, sidebar, there was one time when she was performing in Vegas and they were like, she's like, oh, I can't wait to swim in this pool. They're like, They were like, bitch, you can't sleep in this pool. You can't swim in this pool. Even though she was the headliner. She was like, I can't, it's hot. I can't wait to swim. They're like, you're Black and you can't swim in this pool. And she was just so upset. She was like, they were like, and you need to come through this back entrance when you come and perform.
Bullshit. Didn't
headliner,
they drain the pool
headliner.
Too? They were
so
like, no, we're going to
She
make
was
sure.
like, she was like, I'm going to go swim in the pool. And they're like, Miss Andrews, where are you going? And she's in her cute little bathing suit. And she's like, I'm going to swim. And she just puts her toe in the pool and she's like, tee hee. And they're like, drain the pool. They drained the whole pool.
I didn't know it was after she put her toe in it. That's so rude. That's so
all
disgusting.
All she did was put her toe in it and they drained the pool. After she was done performing, they're like, okay, all right, we got you. Drain
we'll
the
take
pool.
Your money from all of the tickets that people bought to come see you.
And people were aghast. They're like, oh, I'm going to come and see you sing, but oh no, don't put your foot in there. And then they drained it. And that's how crazy, like how sick racism is, where white people will literally burn everything down. They, instead of having equality, and you see this like even now where you see like sometimes people will vote against having a union because it means that the Black man will be equal. The Black person will be equal to them. And they're like, no. I'd rather us all have shit. And I maybe have a little bit more than you possibly be equal as me. And they did that with pools all the time. They're like, okay, like there's this one pool where they filled it up, made it when they're like, okay, no more segregated pools. They're like, great, we're gonna fill it up and make a park, and that pool doesn't exist, so nobody
got a
it.
Pool. It makes it's oh god, it's a disease, it's a sickness. In order this like racist thought, Because it's, you know, whenever something is such a distraction from it is, your own
it is a full-on that we must look at this disease that has been infecting this country and this world for centuries. Because this stuff still remains, this remnants of it.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. It wasn't, this is recent history.
Oh, a stone's throw away. Like, she should still be, she could still be alive. Like, had, you know, this.
Harry Belafonte is still kicking around. Here.
So, on September 8th, 1965, she was found dead in her Hollywood home at the age of 42.
Ooh, young.
Initially, it had been reported as a result of an embolism. Additional findings pointed to an overdose of an antidepressant. She had little more than $2 in her bank account at the time of her death.
Oh, God, that's sad.
She was on her way to a, she was about to perform that night. She was about to fly off to a performance. And too, like, so many of these young actresses, too, have died of, like, they were prescribing everybody pills at this time. And, many of them have died with, you know, pills or in the mixing of different things. And you just had, like, this mistreatment of them in the industry by the paparazzi. And it's just sad that you still even see this today of, like, how women are treated, you know? And so it's just, it's just really unfortunate. So I want to celebrate Dorothy Dandridge because she is up there with Judy Garland and the Grace Kellys and the Ava Gardners and the Marilyn Monroes, and she just never got her what was really deserving of her, you know, and
her roses.
She didn't get her roses. So Dorothy, we celebrate you.
Fairhaven's a hip town. Craft breweries, killer music scene. There's only one catch. The bloodthirsty monsters.
Feel free to hit the deck while we lay down some suppressing fire.
You're gonna kill them?
Nah, these are shock rounds, so it should just knock them out. We use these on the kids after they've had too much sugar cereal.
Hun, stop! We do not! He's such a jokester, this one. Anyway, hit the deck, please!
Get
take
some!
That, take it!
Get some!
Yeah! Job, hon. That was great.
Oh, you're the best.
Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Okay, so are we going to Argentina?
Oh, we are going to Argentina. I don't know if I should be saying that. This is
I know.
People.
I'm like, maybe I shouldn't. Okay, so just to explain what James just said, I'm getting my notes up right now, is yes.
Who are you? Talking about Black history, we're going to talk about Aneke's Black history. So
a little bit of my Black history, because it was a shock to me. Like, if you've been listening to this podcast for 100 years, then congratulations, I love you. Then you are familiar with who I am. But if you are not, and you're a new listener, awesome. I'm glad that you discovered James. But hello, I am your Aunt Aneke. I famously am Jamaican. Like, that is something that I toot
play
all
the
time.
We're going to just do edit all these times when you were like, well, as a Jamaican person, I'm Jamaican. You know what we do in the Jamaican. Oh, those are my people, the Jamaicans.
Bam, 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 bam. You know, one of those things. So, yes. So, okay. But a lot of, there's like some other, you know, different like Caribbean islands that are in there, like St. Kitts. And then also there's African-American as well, too. So a lot, but a big chunk is Jamaican. So I was talking to a family relative recently, and it was casually dropped, just full casual, where it was like, oh, yeah, when your great-great-grandmother came over here from Argentina. And I was like, what?
What? That's huge. I remember you texted me. You're like, James,
I am
part Argentinian. We're like, wait, what?
I know. Like, what? So
you didn't need to spit into a cup to find that out. Just someone to tell you the truth.
Yeah. So, okay. So basically what it boils down to, there's varying levels of great. I don't know which great it is. Just know that it's either two or more. Okay. We'll land on two. So my great-great-grandmother came to the United States in the 1920s speaking only Spanish with her family, her mother and her father. Her mother emigrated to Argentina, but her father was born in Argentina. And so, you know, a Black Argentinian or Argentine. Mm-hmm. Afro-Argentine. This mm-hmm. is crazy to me because when you think about Argentina, you think white people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is supposed to be like, oh, the Europe of South America. Like, my friend went to Argentina when we were in college, and she was like, yeah, this is white people. It's like Europe.
Well, I often, for whatever reason, my connections to it, I always think of is that's where Nazis ran away to. And so
that's true.
That always is like, I know. Why were Nazis running there? What was so, why do they feel like they would be safe over there? Because they could blend in. No question.
You will understand a little bit more. So what okay. I'm doing for this corner, we're not just going to be talking about my lineage. So because of this tidbit that came to light, I was like, okay, there's black people in Argentina, apparently, because I'm related to them. Like, yes. I'm Afro-Argentinian. Like, I can
you
claim that,
Afro-Latina.
I feel like. Can I claim that? I can claim that.
I think you, yes, you, the roots, let's look at the tree.
I know, where's
Where is Argentina, South America? What do we call that? Latin
yeah.
thing?
I'm Latin America.
Yes, that's what we call it.
So I guess I'm Afro-Latina, but I mean, I definitely feel like I could claim Afro-Argentine because...
Now it makes sense too, because that's why you've been side-eyeing What's-Her-Face for so long, Gina Rodriguez, because erasure of Afro-Latinas. You thought you were doing it as an ally? No, you were doing it because she was erasing you and your people.
It's in my blood. It is in my
blood. It was coming out.
Blood
was coming out for that moment.
I need to. And you know, it always feels weird. Like, and I'm sure a lot of people feel this way too. Whenever you're talking about like when you're American and you're so far removed from these countries of origin. But yeah. You know what? Fuck it. If my great-great-grandmother's father was a black Argentine, then I am Argentine. There we go.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. So I did a bunch of research. I wanted to just know about the history of black people in Argentina.
Wow.
Because that is deeply fascinating to me.
100%.
So, okay. So there's a phrase that is used a lot where they say, there are no black people in Argentina, so we can't be racist.
Portland.
So many people say that in Argentina. And then in 1997, your favorite time period right now, James.
I've traveled back. I feel like I missed out.
So in Argentina, the president at the time in 1997, Carlos Menem, when he was asked if there were black people in Argentina, he said, no, Brazil has that problem.
What? Okay. That tells you everything you need to know about Argentina and their
it's
thoughts about
wild.
Okay. All right.
So whenever you ask like most Argentinians or however you say it about Afro-Argentines, they literally, like the average person who lives in Argentina thinks that Argentina never took part in the slave trade. Or that the Afro-Argentines just left Argentina naturally. Like, they just left. They went away. I know.
How does that even make sense? Like, how they created a little border. They're like, no, Spain. No. We know that we are also speaking Spanish in your language. But none of that here, sir. None of that slavery here. Like, Spain loved slavery.
Loved it.
They loved it. They kept doing it until people
they
were like, stop
loved
it. Stop it. They did it the longest. They kept
they were
doing
like,
it.
Give
and
me
so,
that.
I love that you're talking about this. Because South America in general has had issues with coming to terms with the racism that black people
so
are experiencing
much.
Down
Same
there.
Same shit.
And their history of the slave trade.
Speak on it. Because even though Argentina is considered like the whitest country in South America, it, just like Brazil, just like its neighbor, they were colonized by Spain. They had Spanish colonists shipping in African slaves. And, but let's just kind of, so where we're at right now with Argentina. Argentina's
Well, was Brazil Portugal?
Yeah, Brazil.
Was it also Portugal?
Brazil was colonized by Spain and also Portugal, but Portugal took over. That's why they speak Portuguese.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But,
okay, perfect. See, look at her knowing about her app. So I was just,
I know you got
see,
me.
I was just quizzing you, and you were like, let me
also,
show you
majority
how we do it.
Also, the majority of South America was colonized by Spain, which is why Brazil's the only place that speaks
right,
Portugal,
but that,
Portuguese.
Well, and my hunch is, like, I'm sure they were, Brazil was like, let's, okay, Spain, oh, give yeah. me some of them I slaves mean, too. I'm sure they weren't like, oh, no, no, we're just taking ours from Portugal.
Let's not even, like, the Portuguese were brutal with slavery. Like, they
like, started it. They were like, cool. They were kicking it
okay,
off.
Okay, so, all right, so back to Argentina. So current Argentina, right, where we're at with Argentina right now, the European ethnicity constitutes 97% of the population. We're not even talking about indigenous people. Mm. Like 97% of the population are European roots.
This very is suspect.
In 2010, 150,000, that's it, 150,000 identified themselves as Afro-Argentine. Just to put it in context, you know how many people have passed away from COVID right now? 500,000. So...
I feel like this also reminds me of like my life here in San Francisco.
Yeah, last
like,
black man in San Francisco.
There's no black people.
So
here.
For the year, the population is 0.365% of 41 million people consider themselves Afro-Argentine. Suspect.
I would not want to be those people there. That seems like a 100%. Terrible place to be.
Yes.
And be black.
Okay, so that hasn't always been the case though, which is what I found out through my own ancestry and the stories that were told. During the late 1700s, nearly 50% of the population in the interior of Argentina was black. And between 30 to 40% of the population of Buenos Aires was black or interracial. This is in the 1700s.
Oh, okay. I bet you they do not teach this in Argentinian
school. Well, they absolutely don't. That's why they're like saying like, oh, we never had slavery here. Like we'll get to that. Okay. So
okay.
It is widely reported. So this is the reason. So what happened? How did we get here? Right. It is widely reported that the president of Argentina from 1868 to 1874, which is a long ass time to, anyways, what his name was Domingo Faustino Sarmiento. Sarmiento was a fucking racist, horrible person. That's all you need to know, right? Mm-hmm. He basically did a covert genocide of black people. So at the time, Argentina really wanted to be a part of like the like world powers at the time, which were like Europe because of colonization and United States, right? Because the United States was doing a lot of like colonization too. Like, let's not forget about like the mess with the Philippines and all of like all of this manifest destiny bullshit was going on at the time. So Argentina was like, we want to be like them. And you can tell that Sarmiento really valued this type of thought process because there's this quote that he said in his 1848 diary. He writes, in the United States, 4 million are black. And within 20 years, 8 million will be black. So what is to be done with these such black people hated by white people? Slavery is a parasite that the vegetation of English colonization has left attached to leafy tree of freedom. So he's a piece of shit. So I bring this up.
He was like, England, you left us with all these black people that
and
we don't like.
What do we do with them?
And we can't enslave them anymore because y'all said that we
freedom.
Can't do that. So what are we supposed to do? They're just here. We just look at them. You treat them as humans.
Piece of shit.
Fucking idiot.
God. Like,
mind, race is a made-up thing. It is a made-up thing. It is not real. The caste system, it's a caste system
based
on race.
And Sarmiento fully agreed with it. So before he became president in 1868, he, you know, like most presidents, he like worked in the military or whatever. He, yeah.
Meanwhile, too, we just finished our Civil War. Really. We wrapped that up and we're trying to do Reconstruction.
No, this Trying. Isn't. This is during. So this is before. We haven't gotten to him. So this
oh,
is.
Shit. Okay.
So
okay.
During in 1864, there was a war between Argentina and Paraguay. So Sarmiento in the military, he enlisted only Afro-Argentine people to fight in this war. And allegedly, Sarmiento knew that Argentina wouldn't fare well in this war, sending thousands of Afro-Argentine men to their death.
I mean, the U.S.
I know, but I'm just saying.
All right, black people, World War One, go off to the front lines.
International.
But it's interesting that it's the same. It's the
same.
That's
why I wanted
playbook.
To point it out because like, this is the exact same thing we hear about the United States or whatever. But we need to hear about this happening in other countries as well.
Yes, we do.
Because it's bullshit. Yes, that's why Black Lives Matter was picked up across the world.
Mm-hmm. All over the world. And that's like during Black Lives Matter when it first started, I Googled where is it safe for black people to go live. There wasn't. Canada's maybe one of the best places, and it gets you still got to be on your guard there. Like, you can't let your hair down because they might be like, put that
you
up.
You never know. Okay, so because the war impacted the gender balance so much, because all these black Afro-Argentine men were killed. Black women, there's no men, so they really kind of insisted on intermixing to, you know, get rid of black people, basically. To say like, oh, hey, have kids with these, with white people, you know, just to kind of slowly eradicate black features and all of that.
I'm wondering, and you might get to this, or maybe I like, don't expect you to be the leading expert on Afro teens. I imagine too that black people too, just because it's very similar all over the world when you have this, is that they probably were living in probably impoverished sort of neighborhood.
So, sorry not to like, but you know, we're like right there, we're right on the precipice of this. The war in 1864 happened. A ton of black men were killed in this war. The remaining black people, remember, we're dealing with a lot of black people, so that war, that one little war is not going to get rid of all of us right away. So when Sarmiento became president, he instituted highly oppressive and deadly policies to eradicate black people. He segregated the black community from European descendants and placed them in squalor with no decent infrastructure and no health care. And then this became a death sentence because cholera and yellow fever broke out. And since they were in these horrible conditions with no health, millions of black people died. So yeah, you're right on the freaking money.
Because my next follow up question was going to be like, oh, was there segregation?
Yes.
And there it is. Exhume the bodies. See, you're doing it too.
I'm exhuming the bodies. So meanwhile, all these black populations are diminishing because of war being killed, because of being in terrible conditions, because being systematically underserved. All of this bullshit, right? Argentina's like, hey, white people, come on over, baby.
And is it Christina Aguilera, like, a court Argentinian?
I know, there it is.
There it is.
Okay, so European immigrants swelled the white population. 2.27 million Italians came to Argentina between 1861 to 1914. And this is mostly because of, you know, Argentina wanting to be Eurocentric, wanting to be like Europe, wanting to be like the United States, and wanting to be like, oh, look at us, we're European, we're different than these other countries surrounding us with black people. Like, come here. They even, like, created loopholes in their constitution in order to get, like, white people to come. Yeah.
Wow. They're like, come get some of this like wonderful like South American weather without black people.
Yes.
Bothering
you. So they basically did that. They slowly eradicated black people, right? But then they had to eradicate them from the culture, which is even sicker to me. Well, of course, killing people is sick, but this is like sick because it changes the mind frame. So Argentine leaders went about rewriting and whitewashing history. So original paintings of Afro-Argentines dancing the tango were redone with white European protagonists. Gauchos, the national figure of Argentina, who had typically been indigenous or African, were often portrayed in popular culture with light skin and eyes. Paintings of victorious Argentine armies often showed no hint of non-white soldiers. And in this way, while their contributions to Argentine culture remained, the existence of images of Afro-Argentines was purposely, systematically eliminated from Argentine history. Isn't that crazy?
Well, it also makes what I like about this investigation that you're doing. Again, it's like that Brechtian effect. When you're seeing how something is happening mm-hmm. in a different land, you can start to connect the dots and see how it also has happened mm-hmm. in your own land. It's the same playbook. We don't talk about it because it's right here in front of our face and people be like, oh, no, that's not true.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. How much like I was talking to my dad about some of the stuff about Black History Month that I've been learning. And my dad is like, they did not teach that to him when he was a kid. He didn't know any of his own Black history. He opens up a book and they're like, here's a nuclear family, and it's like four right. like a white family. There's, you know, like it's, and all this stuff is so purposely done that we've been erased and taken out yep. of the history, so that we have no importance, we're barely human. And they did the same thing. Like, of course Argentinians are like, oh, we've never had Black people here, but they're great.
They have never totally erased Afro-Argentines from the playbooks. It's ridiculous. So not only did they erase Black people from their history, they also started to flip and use it as slurs. So still to this day, blackface is used. The word Negro is definitely used as an insult by school children and adults. Those with darker skin are routinely denied admission to nightclubs and often arbitrarily pulled over or questioned by police.
I knew I had a sinking reason of why I never wanted to go down mm-hmm. to Argentina. I knew that like it seemed glamorous, but there's something always in the back of my head that was like, right? I don't want to go there.
I see like something missing like that, it just feels weird, especially when it's so close to so many other countries that have Black people yes. in it, where it's like, what you yes. doing? What's going yeah. on?
You're so right. It never made sense to me of how white Argentina right. was. And there was the two things, and you've already pulled it out. Why it was so white, and why did so many fascists yeah, love like, what's going on? Over
like,
there?
If like I heard that, oh, my great-great-grandmother came over from Brazil, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. And I would be like, ooh, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, mm-hmm. and I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. But when I heard that it was Argentina, I was like, what?
Fleeing for their like life,
the fact
and
that
safety.
They left in the 20s is
yeah, it's already like they were already endearing. Like they survived so much, they were already like the last few that were there. And this is what I always want to go back to, and I want to remind everybody. I want to remind all of our Black listeners mm-hmm. specifically, and white people, you listen up too. Black people are survivors. We are such motherfucking magical yep. human beings because, again, we are surviving the atrocities of a caste system that still yes. exists today. And just because we don't call it that, and this genocide that has happened not only in America but yep. globally, this pandemic of a caste and a racist society has been, we've been surviving it for mm-hmm. centuries. So, and we've always, you know, what would you have done back then? What yeah. are you doing now? Now is your opportunity to like, what are you doing now to deconstruct this system? And Black people keep pressing
Thank
on and being
you.
Magical. Because that is,
I know, isn't
that
crazy?
Insane.
And speaking of now, I'm glad that this is a good segue. Now, Argentina is starting to wise up. Argentina and a lot of the few Afro-Argentines that are still there are like, hey, we're here. Listen to us. Listen to our story. Mm-hmm. So things are shifting. So more Afro-Argentines are asserting their heritage. And then Argentina as a country is starting to promote tours and tour stops that are in celebration of Argentinians' African roots, which is kind of cool. A little too late, but, you know, whatever.
They want Beyonce to come in more.
Stop it. Who doesn't? I mean,
they want that Beyonce money. See, Beyonce, you are a Trojan horse.
I'll take
horse.
It. I know.
And we send her in.
And then she's like, blackity, blackity, black, 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 black,
black. Black lives matter. And they're like,
I know.
Right,
so
Beyonce.
I just wanted to name a couple right, of Black places that are, and also some nods to the culture of Argentina, too, that you might not have known. So the first place is called Capilla de los Negros, which attracts a little over 11,000 tourists each year. And there's a church. It's a church that was named for the free slaves who built it in 1861. It is a part of this. It's like a, so UNESCO has like heritage sites that's like all over the world. So they named it one of the Argentinian heritage sites, which is kind of cool. So somebody was quoted saying, this is where we locate ourselves and point to the truth that we are here. which is awesome. There's another place called Movimiento Afrocultural on Buenos Aires Calle Defensa in San Telmo. It's a cultural institution that was started in 2009 to promote African and African-Argentine heritage. Now, they teach tango there. So you may wonder, tango, that's like the national dance of Argentina. Like, whenever you think of Argentina, you think of tango and Nazis. So...
And then sometimes I think of Nazis.
Now you can add a
neck
to that too.
I now have a weird image of you tangling
no,
with
fuck
like
no.
a little Hitler's mustache
no, no, no,
guy.
No, no. Erase that. So okay, so there's a teacher, Verona Caruco, at the Movimiento Afrocultural. She said, there's no doubt that tango has an African origin. The only doubt is the exact story of how it came about. So the dance form was created in the late 1800s, and it's the result of the fusion of African and European immigrant culture. So
that tango, I was like... This feels
it's
black.
It's very
like, there
black.
Was something about that drum beat percussion.
If there's a sick beat, there's a black game. Person behind it. So,
done.
Okay, so the Kikongo, which is an African tribe, the word for sun is Ntongo. And the movements of the Ntongo through the sky inspired dance forms on Earth that were eventually creolized with Spanish and Italian influence in Buenos Aires. So tango literally means moving time to a beat. So in fact, the first documented painting of people dancing tango are black. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Trying to erase this. See, is there anything that we didn't that's dope and amazing? Like rock and roll music? Like we just...
I know. So that is my little corner on Afro-Argentine. Olé!
You have it. That's the show. But a really quick fact check. Debbie Allen's song and dance number that she did with Felicia Rashad, More Than a Man. It is great. YouTube it. We talked about it here on the show. Episode 260. We did for the Black Panthers. If you want to learn more about Fred Hampton as you are watching Judas and the Black Messiah, definitely check that out. The name of the lead singer of Years and Years, who is in It's a Sin on HBO, Ollie Alexander. Forgot his name. And my therapist said that It's a Sin couldn't even be a show of it's taking place here in the United States because it would be so atrocious in terms of what was the treatment of gay men here in the United States. Like, it's really bad when you see what happened to the folks in London, just how they were treated, dying alone, silently. It was even worse here in the United States, according to my therapist, who was a part of ACT UP. The Dandridge sisters were performing in the Chitlin Circuit. I called it something else, but it was the Chitlin Circuit. And Dorothy Dandridge was running not only on a moving train, y'all, but it was a moving flatbed train. When you see the movie, it was like a moving flatbed on a fucking train that she had to hop on as the train was choo-chooing away, jump out of this car, jump onto it as Harry Belafonte chases her. It's wild. So many stunts she does in that movie. And I confuse Betty Grable with Greta Garbo. So if you want to hear an episode 6 in the Quizlet Corner, if you want to see what was the wild story that we were confusing Betty Grable with Greta Garbo, there was a really wild story, then you'll have to check it out. Episode 6. Go back into the archives. All right, and a big thank you to our editor, Sarah Brown, who's making the magic happen. A big thank you to Sam Jackson, our social media manager. Definitely check out all her Instagram posts for Black History Month and more. It's been so fabulous. Sarah Brown's been holding down our YouTube channel. You can also look at our faces as well. And a big thank you to all of our listeners and our Maximum Fund members. We can't do this show without you. Have a great, wonderful week. We love you all so much. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Stay safe, wear a mask. We love you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.